Final hour, next man up, 102.5. The game, Jake Lyman out here at the third annual Pella Putt for Pink Golf Tournament at Hermitage Golf Course. Registration just opened up, getting ready for a 1 p.m. shotgun start on what is a beautiful day here at the course. Teron Davenport is back at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We open up our third hour of the show as we go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football, joins us for his weekly visit. Andrew, as always, thanks for taking the time. Congratulations on the win. What's going on?
Not much. What's up with you guys outside of, well, Jake hanging out at the golf course?
Yes, out here at the golf course, you know, talking lots of Titans, but excited to talk some Vanderbilt. They're winning. They're 3-0. Commodores with a big win on Saturday night in Columbia, 31-7, Andrew. I think heading into that game, everybody knew that it was anybody's game. Vandy was only, I think, a 3-point underdog, but to go in there and blow that team out and win by 24, shut them out in the second half. How impressive was that to see from Clark Lee's bunch on Saturday night?
I think the past 2 weeks have been pretty impressive, especially the physicality of the offense and the defensive line. I think we talked about it a bit last week, guys. The transfer portal, it's a wonderful addition, and you can kind of allocate your resources as you like. And Vanderbilt certainly decided to allocate a decent chunk of its resources to upgrading the offense and defensive line. They put focus there. You could see it with the number of additions that they had. So that's great work by Clark Lee, Barton Simmons, Tim Beck, Jerry Kill, the whole bit. And it's proved dividends. They've been able to be very physical with back-to-back power four teams. And I think that in and of itself has been fun to watch.
You now come back home, and the question with these types of games is always, is there going to be a letdown? You're coming off an emotional road win against South Carolina, coming back home to face a Group of Five team. I would think you wouldn't have to worry about this week. I would guess that this team is pretty locked in on Georgia State, especially with what happened last year in Atlanta.
You would think so. Clark talked about it again at his weekly press conference, the fact that it's not just the way that they played last year versus Georgia State, it's the way that they prepared. He felt like there were some markers going into last year's Georgia State game on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that didn't equal a team that was ready to win on Saturday. So I think more than anything, you've got a team that's been able to prepare as well as it needs to on a pretty consistent level. And I still think, regardless of last year, previous years, this is a pretty mature group. I keep going back to what David Culley told me in fall camp. Like, he came out and he watched and he said, this is a mature group. They know what they're supposed to do. And it does feel like this group has continued to do that through this beginning chunk of the season. I respect that the schedule is going to evolve and seasons get difficult. And there's moments that happen in seasons that challenge your maturity and your resolve, but right now you've got like a really focused, really mature, really confident group. So, Georgia State, Utah State, Alabama, South Carolina, Virginia Tech, it does feel like this team more than anything is just focused on executing what it needs to do to win ballgames.
And there's a standard, when you're an SEC team, if you're facing anybody outside of your conference, let alone Georgia State, it's like, hey, we expect to win that game. So I say all that to say, how much do you think this organization, this program, has taken a step towards establishing that as a standard, whereas it's the expectation and it's a total letdown if a Georgia State beats them?
Good question. There's probably a bunch of different ways I could go with that. I do think that I keep focusing on this group of guys. The NFL and college have a lot of similarities. I think key difference is the way that rosters evolve from season to season. Not to say that NFL doesn't do that, but you can have a guy kind of anchor teams and programs for a long, long time. In college, that kind of twists and turns a little bit more. So this group of guys, this specific collection of guys, is super focused. A lot of that is Diego Pavia. A lot of that is the standard that Clark Lee has been able to build. A lot of it is the combination of everything all at once. I feel like I'm given a bit of a coach speaky answer, and I don't mean to. I see it with this group on a day in and day out basis. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in 10 years to anybody, But right now, this team not only believes that it should beat Georgia State, it believes it should beat everybody. And that confidence in and of itself, again, it's going to be challenged. But I just feel it every day in and around that practice field.
I love that. And a part of having that standard and that expectation is having stars. And we obviously know Diego Pavia is a star, but could we see one in the making, a Martell Hite? I mean, is there a possibility where, you know, he could start getting to play both sides of the ball more consistently?
I think they feel pretty good about where he's at on both sides of the ball. Clark addressed this in his press conference, too, where he's not concerned about the number of snaps. And I think he's looking forward to Martell impacting the game in special teams as well. Of course, last year he led the SEC in punt return yardage. And the way that Vandy has kind of controlled games, there hasn't been just oodles of opportunity. I don't know that his play count is going to elevate a ton moving forward. I think what you would see from Martell is a comfort as a wide receiver. I think there was a play, TD, where he may have been called for an illegal block, and it was just kind of the way that the play evolved that, you know, he went, I think he went low when he couldn't go. I can't quite remember the specifics, but my point is, like, his comfort out there as a wide receiver, he's going to see the play, he's going to know the play, he's going to see everything develop around him, which I think has the opportunity to allow him to be more impactful as a wide receiver. He's been out there, he's been making catches, but as he gets more comfort at that position, which he did play in high school, it's not a brand new position for him. He played both ways in high school like most right. of these guys do. I think the game slowing down for him at that position might allow him to make more explosive plays. That doesn't mean a snap count is going to go up. I just think he's got an opportunity to perform a little bit better just as he settles in.
Andrew, I have a question that I have to ask just for me because I was very confused on Saturday night. The hit that knocked Lenoris Sellers out of the game, Langston Patterson gets ejected for targeting on that play. Luckily, it was before halftime, so he'll be available this weekend against Georgia State. Did Clark or you ever get any kind of explanation on why that was called targeting? Because for, at least from what I was watching on TV, he didn't lead with the crown of the helmet, and that is a key marker of something being called targeting.
Yeah, so I thought it was targeting in real time, in part because a quarterback is a defenseless player. And when you have a defenseless player, you don't need to have crown of the helmet.
Okay.
You can make forcible contact to the head and the neck with pretty much anything, and it can be considered targeting. Now, there's also the aspect of the launch and all of that sort of stuff. You'd have to go onto the SEC's website, and they kind of split up between defenseless player and not a defenseless player. If you're not defenseless, the only form of targeting that you can get is lowering the head and crown of the helmet, which is the 6 inches from the apex of the helmet, if we want to get super technical. Langston wasn't malicious in any of it. And I think, you know, I've talked with Clark and I've talked with a few others about, like, the teachability of that moment for Langston. You know, it's hard because he didn't leave his feet. He put his hands up because he was trying to block the pass of Sellers, and it just happened that the follow-through of his motion took him helmet to helmet, face mask to face mask with Lenoris, and it's the quarterback position. And if you're dealing with the quarterback, and if a ref's going to see face mask to face mask, forcible anything above the head neck, you're going to get a flag. And honestly, I kind of was a little surprised it didn't happen quicker. I know Shane Beamer was too. I don't think that Langston didn't do anything malicious. And some of it is like, Jake, getting into the nitty gritty, like definition of, like, how do you define forcible? What's your definition of the word launch? It was definitely not egregious in any means, but at the quarterback position, I don't know. It just felt like it was going to happen. And, again, thankfully, no harm, no foul, ultimately, for Langston. He's back this week. And best of luck to Sellers, because nobody wants a player like that to
for sure.
Of.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I always find, like, with a team like Vanderbilt that's turning the corner and gaining respect, when you have a win, like, they're always looking for reasons to cheapen it. So I'm going to ask you, this is a win that came without Sellers playing the full game. Why isn't that a cheapened win, even though this team didn't have their number one option the whole game?
I feel like all the algorithms are waiting for me to say something clickbaity. I think number one, first and foremost, is the way that Vanderbilt physically controlled that game. The offense was moving well for South Carolina with Sellers, but then they came away with the turnover, and Coach Lee and Coach Gregory have done a great job making adjustments both against Virginia Tech and against South Carolina. So number one to me is the physicality that Vandy brought versus South Carolina on the line of scrimmage, which would have paid dividends in the third and fourth quarter. The second point, if we want to kind of go down this path, is like they brought in a 47-year-old to play quarterback. And I say that facetiously, but Luke Doty has been there for a hot minute. My dude knows that offense. So he doesn't run the same offense, obviously, as Sellers. He's not the same player as Sellers. But you can make calls through the offensive coordinator, Mike Shula, with a full confidence that this guy knows where he's supposed to go, find the right reads, all of that sort of stuff. He was the starting quarterback for South Carolina in 2021 when Vandy went there. So, you know, is it the same? No. I mean, like, if we lose Diego Pavia for a half, like, we're not the same team. And I think everybody gets that. Lenora Sellers is outrageously talented, and we all want him back playing in the SEC. I think more than anything, it's just the physicality that Vandy brought and the fact that, yeah, there's a pretty experienced quarterback that stepped back in. I you know, who knows what the final score would have been. But we played the game that was in front of us, and Vandy certainly dominated it.
Last one for you here, Andrew. We've seen Theo Vaughn on the sideline throughout all three games so far, and the story this week of him wanting to go on a date with Diego Pavia's mom and all this. Like, how have you seen the marketability of this program increase throughout this great run with Pavia? And obviously Diego gets all the headlines, but it just feels like Vanderbilt football is the cool thing to be around right now, whether it's Theo Vaughn, Jelly Roll, Nate Bargatze, who obviously is a lifelong Vanderbilt fan, but it just feels like the time is now to get on board with Vanderbilt football.
I don't mean to be like the silly. I feel like the person I should spin around and ask that to is TD. Like, I'm around it all of the time. The algorithm serves me Vandy stuff all of the time if I'm on my phone. So that honestly, I'd be curious TD's perspective on like how he has seen and felt that ebb and flow over 12 months.
Yeah, no, I would say that it has ever since the goalposts went in the river. I would say I started to see a lot more Vandy stuff, you know, and it's pretty cool. And that's why you look at a guy like Diego Pavia and the energy that he's put into that program, I think is it's priceless. So to your point and to Jake's point, it is cool to be associated with Vandy football now.
I love it. He probably answered that better than I could.
Well, I mean, that's because I'm experiencing it. Like you said, you have it. That's your expertise. It's going to be on there regardless, whether it's, you know, 3-0 or 0-3.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's been fun to see people on the sideline. And, you know, Theo Vaughn's just a genuine football fan from what I gather. It's not like I've had elongated conversations at practice. I think the dude just loves ball. And he obviously, I think there might be some like, there might be some crossover representation between Diego and Theo. Don't quote me on that, but I think there's some crossover there. So they've gotten to know each other. And like, I think Clark and Theo are genuine friends at this point. Theo just loves ball. He's a kid from Louisiana that loves football. And we're certainly glad that he's someone that wants to support our program, be around our program, and have Nate support our program on SNL and all of this sort of stuff. So, you know, Nashville's a fun city, man. Like, if you can't make the experience fun, like, you're competing with everything in this town. Right? Like, God, I can't think of any. There's so many times I've driven past, like, Nissan and be like, oh, I didn't know someone was playing a concert tonight. What's up with Beyonce?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it is that city. And Ryan McGee had a great line in one of his articles about Pavia. It's like, in a city that is almost impossible to grab people's attention for a long period of time, Diego Pavia has kind of grabbed a slice of sports attention in the city. So it's been fun. I think we're trying to, you know, enjoy it, hopefully keep on winning ball games and keep on welcoming people to West End.
Andrew, as always, appreciate you taking some time. Excited for the game this weekend against Georgia State. Again, you can listen to that game right here on 102.5 The Game with Andrew, Kevin, Norm, and the whole crew. Andrew, thanks for coming on. I'll see you on Saturday.
As always.
Appreciate it.
Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football, joining us for his weekly visit. Great stuff from Andrew. We'll react to what he had to say and look a little bit at Vanderbilt's next couple of games against Georgia State and Utah State. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly with you for a little bit longer on this Thursday. I'm out here at Hermitage Golf Course. Beautiful day for the third annual Pella Putt for Pink Golf Tournament. Chase and Big Joe will be out here coming up at noon. Just talked to Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football. Commodores taking on Georgia State on Saturday. That's a 6:30 kick at First Bank Stadium, 5 o'clock pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. TD, we talked to Andrew about it at the end there. It is cool to see Vandy as a marketable football program that is in the national conversation right now. They're in the college football playoff conversation. I know that there are Vols fans out there who are not going to like hearing that, but it's true. Like, Vanderbilt is 3-0, and there is a path for them to make the college football playoff, a realistic one. Will they do it? That remains to be seen, but you look at their schedule, there is a path for them to do enough to be in contention, to be in that 12-team playoff at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's definitely an option, and I think that's something to be excited about. Now, is it likely? No. However,
right. Just
to be able to go to a Vandy game and not expect them to get blown out, I think that's a huge accomplishment in itself. But now it's like you not only not expect them to get blown out, you expect them to win. And you heard what Andrew said, you know, when he spoke about the shift and how this program is viewed. And I think – getting to kind of start from the bottom, watching an organization, a program be built and work into something that's legitimate, it's fun. And it's something that you take pride in. It's like you feel a part of it because you've seen it from the infant stage up into adulthood. And I would say right now they're like that irritating teenager, you know, so they're still working towards being an adult, but they're getting there.
Right. And it helps for Vanderbilt having a face of this rebuild and rejuvenation of this program with Diego Pavia. Like, a couple years ago, it was a cool story when Kansas finally got out of the cellar. Like, Kansas had been known as the worst team in college football, as a power conference team for a long time. And they started to dig themselves out. They got game day on campus. It was a cool story. But it wasn't as nationally recognized. Vandy has that national recognition because Diego Pavia has put himself out there in the spotlight, and so far he's backed up what he said. Like, I know there was a lot of laughing about him saying, you know, I didn't come back to go 6-6 and talking about a national championship, but so far he's gone out and said done exactly what he said he was going to.
That's all you could ask for, right? You tell me what you're going to do, then you go out and do it. And I think, you know, in this whole process, you got a program that's being built. And again, the expectation being to win. And obviously the players and the coaches, they're going to expect that. But when it's an expectation from other people who aren't putting the blood, sweat, and tears into it, that's when you know the program is elevating.
Right. And again, like you said, do I believe that Vandy is going to make the college football playoff? It would be a stretch. Like, in order to do that, you likely have to win two out of the four between at Tennessee, at Texas, at Alabama, LSU at home. You got to win two of those games, and you have to win all the other ones. So it would be a tough ask for them to do that. It's not impossible, but it's going to be tough. And we get texters on here, like 1325 says Vandy has a 7-win ceiling. They've already got 3. You would hope they can beat Utah State and Georgia State the next 2 weeks. And then are you saying they can't beat all of Kentucky, Auburn, and Missouri at home? Like, to say they can't win those games is kind of ridiculous. So, Vandy, do I think they're going to make the college football playoff? Unlikely. But to say that they can't win more than 7 games is kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, but again, it goes back to what that's why I asked Andrew that question about the wins being cheapened, because you always have those who are going to find default in victory, right? Who are going to find something wrong with progress. That's just, it's human nature for select people. And that's always the case. And that's exactly what's happening in this instance.
Right. And you got to continue to take care of business. You kind of know as Vanderbilt that when you win games, the questions are going to be more about what did the other team do wrong, not what did Vandy do right. And you got to continue to win to change that narrative. They got some opportunities the next couple of weeks to prove that they're legit before heading to Tuscaloosa on October the 4th. So excited for this weekend. Vanderbilt at home against Georgia State. That is a 6:30 kick, 5 o'clock pregame with Andrew, Kevin Ingram, Norm Jordan, and the whole crew. You can listen in right here on 102.5 The Game. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. Titans and Colts coming up on Sunday from Nissan Stadium. Also, we got Thursday Night Football tonight. Dolphins and Bills. Could Mike McDaniel be getting towards the end of his tenure in Miami? We'll talk about both those games in the final half hour here on the show. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. That was Brian Callahan yesterday talking about keys to success for the Titans offense on Sunday against Indianapolis. Titans looking for their first win of the season before a three-game road trip throughout the rest of September. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly with you on this Thursday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. I am out here at Hermitage Golf Course for the third annual Pella Putt for Pink Golf Tournament. Chase and Big Joe will be out here as well. They're coming up at the top of the hour. TD, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but feels like this is make or break time for Brian Callahan. You've got the three-game road trip coming up. You've gotten off to a slow start 0-2, and you know the Broncos game made it even worse for Brian Callahan because you could blame a lot of the things that went wrong on him. Mm. I said it earlier. I think you need an impressive win on Sunday from Brian Callahan to start digging himself out of this hole, because you're getting to the point of no return where it's like there just may not be enough that Brian Callahan can do if you get to 0-3, 0-4, 0-5 to get himself back in the good graces of the fan base and continue to keep himself, I guess, in the good graces of the front office and ownership.
Yeah, no, this is as much of a must-win game in week three as I could think of in a bit. And I think when you look at this being a winnable game for them, it's a division game, it's against a team that's 2-0, there's a lot of positive that could be spun off of this. And so that's why it's very important that they go out and they have everything firing from the jump. But also, they have to find a way to get some production on both sides of the ball in the fourth quarter. So there's an opportunity to answer a lot of questions with this win. I don't think it's a long-term solution, but this is a game where they could definitely get things going back in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, it seems like he's going to put himself between a rock and a hard place if he's not already there, if you lose this game, because odds are three-game road trip against teams that are talented. The Cardinals are 2-0. The Texans have won the division the last couple of years. I think the Raiders probably the most beatable team you're going to see on that road trip. But odds are you lose this game, you maybe win one of those games on the road, and you come back to face that Patriots team. And we talked about the Patriots game earlier. That feels like the spot where a decision's going to get made one way or another just because of who's on the other sideline. And if you come into that game at 1-5 or 0-6, I just don't know if you can survive a loss to your predecessor on the other side for the Patriots.
Right, and that's the big thing, and that's why that game is just sitting there on. And even when it was on the schedule, when the schedule first came out, it's like that's it right there. That's going to be the gauge. Now, of course, this organization has made a significant change in each of the last 3 years. Do they want to do that on the fourth year? Like, is that going to trying to avoid that? Is that going to give them give Callahan a little bit more cushion? I don't know. I do know this. There's a lot of emotions that's involved in these decisions, and a blowout win to Mike Vrabel or loss to Mike Vrabel and the Titans, it would mean Mike Vrabel and the Patriots. It would be such a huge. It would be crushing for this organization.
Right. I think the Titans don't want to fire Brian Callahan, obviously.
Like, right.
They want some stability around this team because, like you said, they've made major change after major change. In 2022, it was John Robbins. 2023, Mike Vrabel. Rand Carthon last year. Like, you'd like to get through a whole season without swapping out leadership at one spot or the other, but you can't have stability just for stability's sake. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just keep him to keep him. He's got to show that he's turning this thing in the right direction. And this feels like a big game. You mentioned it, like, as much as a game can be a must win in week three, and I'm not saying must win for the team. Like, this team's probably not competing for a playoff spot, so winning this game isn't going to affect the overall outcome of the season. But for Brian Callahan and staying as the leader of this team as the head coach, feels like you got to win this game. Mm-hmm. And again, it can't be a game where you back into a win 17-13 because Daniel Jones played horrible and threw three awful picks and you just kind of got away with it. You got to show that it was an impressive win where your team went out and took it and beat a divisional opponent at home. And like you said earlier, take some momentum into this road trip, because I mentioned the Texans, Raiders, and Cardinals. None of those are gimmies, but they're all gettable. And if you take some momentum into that, maybe you can get something going, and Brian Callahan can start to feel like he's on steadier ground with his job security.
And, Jake, you did a good job there just reeling it back in, right? Because this is a team, like, they can't afford to look down the schedule. This team has to look at literally what's right in front of them, you know. And okay, you could look down the line from the aspect of, we got to get this one because this is one that we could spin into more. Like, if I'm a coach, a player, whatever, that's the only way that I'm looking beyond this game. But to your point, what's in front of you is the most important thing, and they're not in a position where they could overlook anything. And at that same time, this is a buy one, get one free. It's actually a buy one, get two free situation, right? Because, you know, you get the win. It's a win against a divisional opponent, but it's also a win just to kind of put things on notice a little bit. Like, hey, look, I get it was 0-2, but when it comes to the division, we're going to make some noise. And this is an example. So there's a lot that's riding on this game. I'm almost tempted to pick the Titans to win, but I just am not at a state where I could do that. But I think this is going to be a much more respectable game, and I think it's one that they have the best chance of winning out of the teams that they've faced so far.
Yeah, Robbie Stanley's come out and said the Titans are going to win on Sunday. He's picking it. I don't know if I'm going to go as far as picking it, because again, when you're 3-16 as a head coach, it's tough to pick you to win any of these
See
games.
What I'm saying?
But it's just the desperation factor has to be there at some point, right? Like, they got to play for Brian Callahan, and we'll see what happens on Sunday. It does feel like a big win, and I know we're not talking about it because the expectation externally is that the Titans aren't going to be competitive for the AFC South. Like, media fans, you look at this team, they don't look like a playoff team to you. But I'm sure internally, TD, they do look at this as a big game for the division, because Jaguars are 1-1, and you've got Liam Cohen screaming at Trevor Lawrence across the field and Trevor Lawrence waving him off. Brian Thomas Jr. is making business decisions. So who knows what's going on there? Texans are 0-2, and C.J. Stroud looks like he's fading away on every pass he throws. You win this game, you're within one game of first place in the division. Like, I understand we're not talking about that because that's not the expectation, but I'm sure that's something in the locker room that they're talking about, that if they want to compete this year and be in the conversation, this is a game you have to win.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. You got to win the game, and that's really what it boils down to. So we'll see how they're able to go ahead and do this, but it's a piece-by-piece kind of thing, right? You got to come out, be effective on offense, right? You got to continue the special teams excellence. You got to be shut down on defense. And to have all three of those phases happen the way that it needs to, it's not likely, you know, with the results that we've seen over the last, you know, a little over a year. But at some point, you got to be able to turn it around. And I think this is a good opportunity to do so.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Last call for phones. If you have any thoughts, questions for TD, we will try and get to them in our last segment coming up. Did want to preview Dolphins-Bills a little bit tonight. Lopsided game on paper, and maybe the only head coach who is on thinner ice than Brian Callahan across the NFL right now. We will get to that coming up next and wrap up the show. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Finishing up the show on this Thursday, Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe coming up right after us. We are out at the third annual Pella Putt for Pink Golf Tournament. Been a great day at Hermitage Golf Course so far. And again, three more hours out here with Chase and Big Joe right after us. TD, want to wrap up the show talking about tonight's Thursday night football game. Dolphins and Bills from Buffalo. Might have ourselves a blah. This might be one where you can go to bed early. but when we talk about Brian Callahan's job prospects, I think the only guy with a hotter seat right now is probably Mike McDaniel. Mm. And not that, like, this game they're expected to win, but you just look at the way that team is playing and Tua Tagovailoa and the injuries and the way he's developed. It feels like that one is almost a when, not an if, of Mike McDaniel being fired and them moving on.
Yeah, it's just a mess over there. I was just looking through my fantasy roster, and I almost dropped Darren Waller. You know what I mean? He's not available to play. It's just one thing after another, and now you look at all the weapons they have, like the talent. Like, that's one thing. You look at the Titans, you look at the Dolphins. You can't say the Dolphins are not talented. Like, there's stupid amount of talent on that offense. The defense, you know, they've traded a lot of it away, but them losing and not having more success is just, it's mysterious to me. But when you look at where they've fallen from, I mean, this team just a couple years ago was one of the most exciting teams in the country. Yeah, you know, dang, I'm still thinking college. In the league, you know what I mean? So now look at them.
Yeah, and Tyreek Hill was a big part of that. Obviously, he's lost a step. And with guys who predicate their game on speed, that happens. There's been some trade rumors around Tyreek Hill. If he gets moved, where would you like to see him go? And why is it going to be the Kansas City Chiefs who bring him back?
Yeah, I think that's really the only situation that works. Because, I mean, outside of the Chiefs, do you want Tyreek Hill? Like, if you were a team that doesn't know him and doesn't have an understanding, like, would you want him?
Probably not.
Right.
Especially, like, he's got off-the-field stuff going on right now, too. Like, I don't know if I'd want to pay any kind of draft capital to get Tyreek Hill on my team right now.
But, see, a team like the Chiefs, they need that punch in the arm. They're 0-2.
Yeah.
You know, and we know the situation receiver-wise, Rasheed Rice and what's going on with him. It's not good. It's not good whatsoever. So you get a little shot in the arm like that, that would help them. I could see them making the move. But anyone else, stay away.
The Chiefs are kind of turning into the Houston Astros of, like, guys leave after the success they have with Houston, and they don't maybe have the same success elsewhere, and eventually they just bring him back and they return to form. Like, Carlos Correa is back in Houston. It's like he's back to who he was before. Same thing with the wide receiver. Like, Mecole Hardman went to the Jets and did nothing. Comes back, catches the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. Juju Smith-Schuster, another example. So who knows? Maybe the Chiefs do make a move and try and bring Tyreek Hill back. Chase McCabe is sitting behind me right now. They're getting ready for their show. And he asked me to ask you a question here. If Mike McDaniel was going to get fired, and let's say the Titans make a coaching change as well, and they bring in a defensive-minded head coach, would Mike McDaniel be somebody that you would consider as the offensive coordinator?
I would consider it, but it's just tough because there's a gift and a curse with that. You bring him in, the offense excels, he's going back to get another head coaching job, right? So you just got to be wary of that. But, hey, I mean, you know, one thing that is good is if that did happen, you get another draft pick, right? Because he positioned himself.
That's a good point.
And, you know, the minority situation, so the compensation. So you do have that. But to answer your question, it's something I would consider. It is, but it just would depend on what the other options are out there.
Right. I guess the hope would be it could turn into a Cliff Kingsbury situation where maybe he wasn't cut out to be a head coach, but if you get him back into his element where he's just the play caller and can focus on scheming things up for a good young quarterback like we've seen with Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels, maybe Mike McDaniel, when he's taken out of that head coaching role, could be the guy for Cam Ward. again, this is all hypothetical. He's still the head coach of the Dolphins. Brian Callahan still the head coach of the Titans. But maybe just an idea if we get to the offseason, the Titans are looking for a new offensive mind to bring in.
Right, exactly. It's one to consider. But you know what? We got 15 more games.
Right.
Excuse me, 14. Yeah, 15 more games because week three, although we've played it out in our mind, it still is yet to be played on the field. So.
Right. Long way to go. Titans and Colts coming up on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. Last home game before a three-game road trip for Tennessee. Looking at this Bills team tonight, TD, if this isn't the Bills' year, then I don't know if it's ever going to happen. Like, they've gotten so close with Josh Allen, the Chiefs look down. And I'm not counting the Chiefs out. I'm not going to be stupid enough to count Patrick Mahomes out in September. But the pieces around him just don't look as good anymore. They're old. They're not explosive. If this isn't the year for the Buffalo Bills, I just don't know if it's ever going to happen with this core as currently constructed. Josh Allen's got a window that's going to last for a while, but it might be time to kind of tear it down around him and try and build it back up again.
AFC Championship game. Ravens at Baltimore. Derrick Henry is going to rush for 180 plus with two touchdowns, no fumbles, and the Ravens are going to the Super Bowl, and they are going to win it.
Yeah, Derrick Henry, he did fumble in that Sunday Night Football game week one, but Derrick Henry does have the Buffalo Bills number.
Mm-hmm.
He does. I mean, you look back to that Monday night game here in 2021, I was in the stands for that game, made the trip out from Blacksburg for that one, and that is still one of the best football games I've ever watched in person. Titans went down early. Derrick Henry hit the 80-yard touchdown to get him back in it, and then it ended with that goal line stand to stop Josh Allen on the quarterback sneak to win it. That was fun, and that was the start of, yeah, I mean, you take that one, the COVID Tuesday night game where Derrick Henry stiff-armed Josh Norman into the next dimension. Like, he's got their number, and I would think that's probably not a matchup the Bills would be looking forward to if it is the AFC Championship against Baltimore.
Yeah, no, exactly, man. It'll be huge, but in the meantime, the Bills will have a blowout tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're 11.5-point favorites. You usually don't see a line that big in the NFL. These are all professionals. Usually the games are decided by one score. I don't think that's going to be the case tonight. It's in Buffalo, night game. I think the Bills boat race the Dolphins tonight on Thursday Night Football. Again, Titans and Colts coming up on Sunday from Nissan Stadium. As most games are for the Titans this year, it's a noon kick. Follow along with Teron Davenport for all his coverage this weekend. TD, always appreciate you taking some time, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, for sure. Yeah, appreciate it, man. Definitely cool to be on. Appreciate everybody listening, too.
Yes, and again, TD, on next Thursday, we'll recap what happens with the Colts game and look ahead to the Titans' trip to Houston coming up next week. Again, it has been a phenomenal day out here at Hermitage Golf Course for the third annual Pella Putt for Pink Golf Tournament, benefiting breast cancer recovery and action. You can see all the participants getting ready out here at Hermitage Golf Course. Again, it's a beautiful day. Shotgun start coming up at 1 o'clock. Chase and Big Joe are going to take you the rest of the way out here from Hermitage Golf Course. Looking ahead to tomorrow, I will be out at Preds training camp at Fordyce Center in Bellevue. Connor Newt is going to join me. We'll talk plenty of Titans, get ready for the college football weekend and much more, but also we'll look ahead to the Preds season, which is now just 3 weeks away. For Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, I'm Jake Lyman. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 9 a.m. Chase and Big Joe are coming up next here on 102.5 The Game.